Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show. I'm one of your hosts, Phil Huff, and Julie Calamine, my co-host in the studio here with me this morning.
Good morning, Phil. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a while since we've actually been together live in the same place and time.
It's on and off. It seems like the summer's been busy for both of us.
How was your weekend?
It was excellent. And how about yours?
Oh, it was good. Yeah. Actually, ended up spending a lot of time doing chores, but got a little bit of walking in close by the house, enjoyed some fall weather.
That's right. Me too. Lots of walking. I was out running around town quite a bit, and the weather was nice. It was just a great fall weekend in Sandpoint.
We saw the equinox come and go. It's definitely fall. Full moon. I think there's a full moon bike ride tonight. We have some folks who are going to talk about some upcoming biking events. But Wayne, right? Tonight's the full moon bike ride?
I'm not an expert on that, but rumor has tonight is indeed the full moon bike ride.
Is it actually the full moon tonight? Not sure.
I think it was last night, but that's, you know.
Technically.
Yeah. So let's do talk a little bit about the weather for all of these upcoming events. Today we have some patchy fog, then sunny in the afternoon, a high of 68 degrees tonight, a low of 43 with some clearing. So we should be able to see that moon. Wednesday we have mostly sunny, high in the 70s. Low in the 40s, and it looks like that's going to be the way it continues through Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, with highs pushing 70 degrees, lows in the 40s, just some really nice fall weather.
That's important to me, Phil, because I have two girlfriends from high school coming to visit this weekend from Minnesota.
Oh, well, nice.
It's going to be great.
Well, we're going to talk this morning about a couple different topics. The first one up is the upcoming Crosstober Cyclocross event put on by and for Team Autism 24/7, and as I mentioned in the studio with us, we have Wayne Pignolet. Wayne, welcome to the show. You've been a frequent guest, but tell our listeners who might be hearing you for the first time your role with the Team 24/7 Autism.
Yeah, so I am the executive director of Team Autism 24/7.
Excellent. Tell us a little background of what that organization does.
What we do is we actually help raise awareness for autism and support families living on the autism spectrum in the, you know, in the greater Sandpoint area. So we do things like programs, educational programs, outreach. We do, you know, the big thing that we do every year is we do a grant program where we give money to two people. We give them to families living on the spectrum, and we also give them to professionals who want training, those types of things, so that they can bring those skills to back to the community.
And Wayne, very briefly, just give us a very, we're going to talk about this at length, but tell us briefly, what is the event we're focusing on that we're wanting to talk about during this program? It's a Crosstoberfest.
So it's Crosstoberfest 7. It's our seventh year. It is a bike race over 2 days, this Saturday and Sunday, out at North Boyer at the University of Idaho property. And essentially, cyclocross is, imagine a road bike with mountain bike tires on it that goes around about a mile and a half course. It's like steeplechase on a bike.
That is hard to imagine.
Yeah.
I'm trying.
I've been to it and watched it. It's a lot of fun to watch.
It's a little crazy.
Yeah.
The worse the weather, the funner to watch, too.
Yeah, absolutely. But so the work that the organization does, tell us about the need in the community for that. Sometimes these are things that seems like we don't talk as publicly about as we might.
Yeah. I mean, the need in the community is the prevalence of autism. You know, the number of families that are living on the spectrum, as they call it, the autism spectrum, just continues to increase. So, for example, it's now it's about 1 in 59 kids are diagnosed. And particularly if you are white and a boy, your prevalence is about 1 in 37, which if you think about it, it's pretty high, right?
Wow.
And that's continued to get
increased. It's growing.
It's increasing, yeah. I mean, dramatically. Mm-hmm. Even since 2014, it's increased by 15%.
And do we know why? Are there some obvious reasons why it's increasing?
You know, that's the really the billion-dollar question is why it's increasing. Mm-hmm. But there's one is for sure reporting. Is that the ability to report? Like in the areas where they know they have really good records, school records and all that, they have a higher prevalence. In areas where they don't. So it's even considered that they may be underreporting what's really going on.
So there may be an increase, but also with just a greater awareness that the problem exists within individuals.
There's no question of what used to be, who knows, mental illness of some sort now. They have a better ability to diagnose it. That's part of it as well. and maybe it's really truly increasing.
And as you mentioned, it's a spectrum, and you know, we probably weren't as aware of the spectrum of autism in earlier days. We might have not noticed, right?
Not noticed, yeah. That, I think that's true. I mean, when I started doing this, I didn't have anybody in my family on the spectrum. It was because of my dear friend David Barth and his wife Lisa, and Jackson, who's really our, you know, our poster child, if you will, for this. Although he just turned, he's about to turn 20. But anyways, you know, the idea simply for us is to continue to that drive that awareness about what it's like, what's going on. You know, the problem that we have in a small community is there's not many resources. Or if you live in a big town, and even if they are live in a big town, they're expensive, but there's just not a lot of resources. So we're trying to help drive families have access and have places to come ask questions and talk to somebody, and then again help to educate people in the area about what it's like to live on this spectrum.
So your initial involvement was personal, even if it wasn't a family member, a close friend. And with the numbers you've been talking about, we probably all have close friends who are dealing with this in some form in their lives, whether we're aware of it or not.
I think it's like one of those things is until you become aware, you aren't aware. Mm-hmm. So as soon as you become aware of it, all of a sudden you realize how many other people are dealing with it. Like I said, when I started, I didn't have anybody on our in our family. But since then, my grandniece has been diagnosed. She lives over in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I knew enough when I first met her when she was about a year. And everybody else in my family had already knew that there was something
happening.
Sure.
And sure enough, it took about another, she was two when she finally got her diagnosis.
So tell us how the organization came to exist.
Well, as many things, it happened because of this, and then it became that, right?
Yeah.
it started out as we were in 2011, we were going to do the Race Across America for the bike ride, which was the Team Laughing Dog. Mm-hmm. And, you know, exactly, one of your water bottles here.
Yep, one of my favorite water bottles.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, it started out as Team Laughing Dog, and we were going to do the Race Across America, and a lot of teams do that race, for those people who don't know, the listeners, is it starts in Oceanside, California, and finishes in Annapolis, Maryland, and essentially you start riding and you stop when you get there. We did it as a four-person team. We were looking for a charity to be, you know, our mission, and because of coming across or knowing David and Lisa, that really became the inspiration, and that's how it started. And so that first year we did the race and we raised a bunch of money and said, you know what, it'd be silly to let this die. So we just kept on rolling. Mm-hmm. And we've been rolling, you know, what is it, 8 years now, 7 years.
And so how did that lead to the Crosstober event?
Well, again, a marriage of bikes and autism, right? So we knew that we had this nice connection between the racing, the bike racing, and autism. And, you know, as we used to say back in 2011 in doing this race, the Race Across America, once that race started, it wasn't stopping. You rode 24/7. And we used to say, you know, our motto was kind of like, we are racing 24/7, but at the end of the race, we get to go home. Mm-hmm. And if you're living on the spectrum, you never get to go. There is no end of the race. It is 24/7, depending on where your family is on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Sure. You know, bicycling and autism, is there a connection beyond just the fundraising? Are autistic kids especially fond of bicycling? And I ask that because I have a nephew who is on the autistic spectrum, and he's a little bicycle motocross madman.
Right. I mean, I think it depends. I think a lot of people on the spectrum have things that they focus on and bring them comfort.
Sure.
Right? You know, it just depends.
Right, like everyone.
It certainly is a great skill for them to have. And again, they call it a spectrum for a reason, right? There are, you know, what we call high-functioning people who are amongst the smartest people you'll ever come across. And although they may feel socially awkward, to those who really have truly debilitating, has a debilitating impact on them. So again, that's the idea of a spectrum.
So we want to talk about the events some, but before we get there, there's other activities that the Team 24/7 has conducted over the years that to assist in this effort.
Yeah, again, we've done a lot of trainings for, you know, all summer. We do different trainings for families. We've done summer camps. We have done assisted riding, you know, with a group down south of Sagal, where the kids can go and they can ride horses and they do all that. So the therapeutic riding, that type of stuff. So, you know, we do have a website, teamautism247.com. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, pretty much gives you all the information about what we do.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of people who are participating in the organization, how has it grown?
Well, there's really three of us that drive it. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, there's one who drives most of it on a daily basis. That's that's Lisa Barth. She is, you know Lisa, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
She decides she's going to get stuff done and she does it. She's fantastic. Yeah. And then David Barth and myself really do the drive. You know, we're a small group, and, you know, we've been fortunate that we have, particularly after that first 2 years that Race Across America was done, we raised a bunch of money. We still have a good chunk of that, and we've continued to add some. So, mm-hmm. you know, we use that money. Again, the big thing we spend money on is this grant program every year that we give out money mm-hmm. to families and to, again, the professionals who bring services to people living on the spectrum. And I think that's probably the thing that's most impactful that we do. Mm-hmm. Certainly the funnest thing. Giving away money is always fun.
It is fun. And what does the grant money go toward?
Well, it depends. Again, so for example, if you're living on the spectrum and money is tight, it's expensive, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things that just help families improve the quality of their life. There's blankets they use that provide comfort. They're heavy blankets, and they're relatively expensive. There's swings. There's the big tricycles. You talked about people riding bikes, so we've bought some tricycles for families so bigger kids can ride them because they may have balance issues, you know, so it becomes an issue of safety. So those type of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really amazing what a small group of people who are dedicated to something can do, and of course, you engage the community.
There's a famous quote about that, right?
Yeah. I try to paraphrase sometimes, but yeah, there is. And it really doesn't, you know, it takes a few dedicated people to make a big difference in the world. But then that's too because they bring in so many folks around them and support.
Right. You know, I mean, I've done a lot of volunteer work, and I've come to this conclusion is it is almost always a small group of people mm-hmm. that do it. A lot of other people are willing, but they have other things in life, and that's mm-hmm. understandable. So it's a small group who really care, and they, I think, Phil, as I think you well know, right, they bring a lot of other people along, yeah. but there's a couple that do the work.
Yeah. And it's interesting with you, Wayne, you know, so often people, when they become involved in a nonprofit, it's because they have a very strong personal connection, and you didn't start out that way, so it's awfully nice that you got involved before you had that connection.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I say this a lot about when I talk about Jackson, and so background, I'm in a men's group, the Sandpoint men's group. I've been in now, boy, I'm getting on 12 years, I think. So every Wednesday night we meet for a couple hours, and David Barth has been in the group since I started. So as I like to say, I've had a front row seat to what it's been like for David as a father to have a child on the spectrum and watch him go through that, and Lisa, of course, as well. And, you know, I can get teary-eyed about it, how wonderfully they've done a very, you know, something I wouldn't want to do it.
It's a big challenge.
It's a big challenge.
And that.
So mm-hmm. it's been beautiful to watch them, how they've done it and grown. And you know, they now have, and here's part of the challenge, is when the kids in Sandpoint, as it turns out, if you're on the spectrum, and the school does a pretty good job, right? The Chafe 150, for the last, I think, 5 years, has given all the money they've raised to the school district for autism programs, and I'm sure it's been used for some other things, but a lot of that has been driven by the Rotary. I know Mel Dick has done a lot for them. So if you're on the spectrum and in the school system, there's support.
Mm-hmm.
Is it all we want it to be or need to be? No, but there's mm-hmm. What happens then is these kids age out of school. Jackson's a good example. This is his first year where he's not in school. It's a whole new set of challenges because, you know, he loves going to school, He loves doing all that goes with coming to school. So now he has to adjust. And kids on the spectrum often are very routine and plan oriented. You have to make sure they know their routine, know their plan. And so it's a change, mm-hmm. and they're working through it.
Now, we've spoken, and you've mentioned a number of times the challenges for and the need for support for children going through this and families of children going through this. But many of them do go on to adulthood and continue to have the need for support.
Yeah, that's exactly the point is now that they're, it's easy to focus. I think it's easier to focus on the kids I think obvious reasons. But then all of a sudden you have adults who still have issues. Some may or may not be able to work, depending on where they are on the spectrum. Again, at one extreme, you have some people who are incredibly high functioning, and you have some that are very low functioning. So yeah, they still need support and services.
So let's turn to the event coming up and work into that too, how folks can support both the efforts of Team 24/7 Autism and the event. But tell us about the history of the event. How did it get started?
Well, again, bike riding and bike racing's always been a big deal, right, for us. So we, after we did the Race Across America, that's organizationally, that's a huge deal. That's like a year of your life kind of planning that. If you're, it becomes, everything else almost becomes secondary to planning something like that because it's a lot of people, it's a lot of money, it's getting everything organized, it's all the training that goes into it. And so we knew we wanted to keep that bike connection because that was the origin of it all. And I had been doing this thing called cyclocross for a couple of years. And it's just something you do in the fall and early winter to keep fit and have fun. And it's like this really fun combination because it is truly like steeplechase on a bike. You ride your bike. It's on dirt, sometimes gravel, maybe a little asphalt. But you climb over stuff. You climb up things. You jump on your bike. You jump off your bike. And the races are all about 45 to 50 minutes. Mm. And there's a series of them throughout the day. So there's different age categories and different skill levels and men's races and women's races and kids' races. So it's fun. You can go watch all the other races. It's usually you can see people riding. You know, in our case, you can see them pretty well. And so it's fun to watch. There are sometimes, and you're never really going all that fast, so really never anybody. I mean, you can get hurt, but tend not to. People will crash. Like our course, we have a sand pit that you can't really ride through it, so you have to run, but people will try, and then they'll fall over, and there's a whole audience there for them. So it's just super fun like that. So anyways, we were looking for something to connect that was fun, that would be good for an audience, and we could do locally. And so we just kind of decided we'd do it. There was a series of races down in Spokane that we were able to tie into. So we just became part of that.
And so then you brought it up here to Sandpoint or
brought up
similar.
Sandpoint.
How long ago was that?
Seven. This is our seventh year.
Right. Good.
All right.
Well, we want to welcome Charles Mortensen into the studio with us. And Charles, you've been involved with the Cyclocross event and the Team 24/7 Autism. Tell us a little bit about your background and role with that.
Well, what was it, 2012?
Whatever 7 years ago is.
7 years ago.
Yeah.
Wayne came to me with this crazy idea to do this event, and the rest is history. We've been doing it for 7 years now, and it's been a blast. I'm a little out of breath because I'm a little bit late today.
Well, that's all right,
no, were you running?
I've got a quick question for Wayne, and this is maybe a dumb question, but do folks on the autism spectrum compete, or is this in this event or not, or is it?
Is you know, there it's any what we tr- what way? We've tried to do is have we have during the middle of the day on Saturday we have an autism walk kind of so families come out.
And Charles, you would like to? Oh. You've got a comment.
Well, this year I think it's going to be first thing in the morning on Saturday.
Is it at first thing in the morning? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Right. And so we have, and we go out, and we do. Do that in honor and walk with them, and we invite all the cyclists who are there to ride around with them. It's all pretty slow for the most part.
And it's combined with a little kid's race at the same time.
Right.
So
and that starts at 9?
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock is the kid's race and the autism walk.
So walk us through what the weekend looks like, or the schedule of events, if you will.
Well, so we'll have couple of food trucks out there, Jupiter Jane mm-hmm. and Mandala Pizza. The 219er bar will be out there with iCarts serving beer from the 219er. We'll have a
sounds good
DJ,
so far.
But yeah. We'll have a
who needs kind of biking?
It's
super fun. I mean, you got to kind of see the environment. It's like the bikes all around you, and you can see everything happening. There's the food and the beer, and there's music. And
it's kind of, if you've ever been to a Dead show, it's kind of like the parking lot scene at a Dead show. So there's a little bit of bike racing, but a lot of mayhem and a lot of good times.
Okay, so it starts up about what time?
The first race on Saturday with the kids mm-hmm. and the autism starts at 9, and it kind of goes through all the day. But then you get around, like, what time's the Masters race start? 10:45, I believe?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay. But anyways, then the faster guys start going around 10:45, and then right after lunch, you get into the really fast.
The pro riders.
It's fun to watch those guys. They're so good.
It's a progression. It's over the course of 2 days or just the
two days. Same races both days. Mm-hmm.
Different courses.
Which weekend coming up is it?
This coming weekend, 29th and 30th.
All right.
You can register online at wildwestcxseries.com. And we encourage that because if you register on the day of, you pay $10 extra.
So that's for participants. You don't need to register.
Yeah. Right.
To come watch. We want people to come watch. It's a fun thing to watch. Mm-hmm. You can walk around the course. It's at the University of Idaho at the former Ag mm-hmm. Center up on North Boyer, just north of the railroad tracks. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of parking. There's a great place to walk around. That's where they have the driving range.
Yep. And so what year is this? How many years has this been going on?
Seven.
7 years now. Wow.
All right.
And it's grown substantially, hasn't it?
Last year was our biggest year in terms of participants. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what it was, like 340 or something like that?
Yeah, 340, I think is right.
For the weekend.
And will the families that benefit be coming and watching? Do they get enjoyment? Do they come and
yeah, they do. They participate in the walk, and then they stick around and watch and have fun with us.
That's good.
Yeah.
So tell us about which events are your favorites. Which ones are you competing in?
Well, you go first, Charles.
Let me talk about Wayne first. So cyclocross.
Oh, here we go. I know where this is going.
So the cyclocross official season spans 2 years. So this season goes to.
Let's just cut to the chase. What he wants to tell you.
To the end of winter 2019. So your racing age is based on your age at the end of next year.
Oh, okay.
So Wayne just had a birthday, and even though he's not quite 60 yet, he'll be racing in the 60-plus category.
Oh.
And he'll be
an advantage.
Beating everybody, by the way.
Yes, an advantage. I don't know about that. He's not quite 60, so.
I have now qualified for the official AARP card of cyclocross. It's the best way to describe it.
So usually Wayne and I do the same. We race together, although I'm 1 year younger than he is. So I'm not racing this year, but I would be in the next category down.
He'd be in 50 plus. And that's one cool thing about it is you can race. So there's a 40 plus category, a 50 plus, and 60 plus, both men. Women, because there's not as many, they have a 40 plus category. But what's cool about that is you're racing against your peers.
Yeah.
Whereas otherwise you'd be racing against some 22-year-old who's got nothing better to do.
Right.
And those, now as it turns out, the fastest group tends to be the 40 plus.
Huh.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's some very, very fast people.
Sure.
Well, except for the Cat 1 and
Cat
2
ones,
men,
yeah.
which are
true. So for people that have never experienced cyclocross or have never done it, why might they want to do it, or why might someone want to become involved in the sport? I know that one advantage is that you're helping Team Autism, but what is it that's so great? What is great about this
sport?
Like,
do you like beer?
Have you listened to the Tuesday morning show?
Do you like handing beer up to racers?
It's a nice combination. As we like to say, it's super funny because you go race if you like bikes. Okay, so you can ride your bike, and it's fun. It's a relatively safe way to go race bikes. a lot of times, like road racing, you know, you're inches from bikes and they crash, that hurts. This is way more tame, and it's much softer landing if you happen to have an issue. It's a great aerobic workout. It's kind of that activity of up and off and around and challenge. And then when you're done, you can go watch others and drink beer, because that's part of the ethos.
It's competitive, but it's in a friendly way. It's really, people are just out there for fun, not necessarily to compete.
So I've got to ask you, in again, from Minnesota, but in Minnesota, they've got bicycle motocross, and it's the little bikes, like one gear. This is not that, right?
Or you're thinking BMX.
I am thinking BMX.
No.
Yes.
No, these are mostly, it's bikes with 20 speeds, you know, your normal bike. There is a single speed category for those who like pain, right? Because, you know, you don't have the ability to shift.
Okay. So you talked about handing beer up to participants. Do you need volunteers?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
To hand beer
if someone, someone's listening and going, that's the job for me, or there is one, who should they get a hold of?
Lisa Barth, probably.
All right. And contact info for Lisa.
Lisa, that's that a good question.
So her email, what is it, Team Autism? It's
teamautism247
at gmail.com.
All right. Okay. Repeat that.
Teamautism247 at gmail.com.
Excellent.
Very good.
Yeah, and volunteer work would be, you know, we do need course marshals. What we really need, to be honest with you, is people help us Sunday afternoon to take the whole thing apart, which is, it's an hour to 2 hours worth of work.
I think we're pretty set with course marshals right now, but, you know.
A few extra hands, many hands.
Or just show up and, you know.
Show up and come watch.
We can,
So I'm hearing the numbers you're talking about and knowing the growth. When will it outgrow the particular venue you're in, or will you have to cap the number of entrants?
No, that venue is perfect. The real issue with that venue is how long we're going to have it, which is kind of an unknown at this
There's that also. Yeah.
We have ideas for other venues for the future.
Excellent.
So we'll keep it going as long as we have the energy to do it, I suppose.
Okay. Well, if you're just tuning in, the first half of the morning show here, we've been talking with Wayne Pignolet and Charles Mortensen with Team 24/7 Autism, Team Autism 24/7, about the upcoming Crosstober event. That's this weekend, just to recap, Saturday and Sunday from 9 to about 5.
Yeah, maybe a little earlier
Four.
Than that.
Let's call it.
Depends on how fast Wayne goes in his division, it sounds like. But if you want to find out more about that, give us the website one more time.
It's WildWestCXSeries.com.
And you can find out about other races in the series there, as well as registration and everything.
Okay. All right. And if you want to help out, you can reach Lisa or maybe go to that site too.
Or, and also just show up on the weekend. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking for something to do, I'm sure someone can find something.
We're going to take a short musical break with a little Genesis to get Wayne in the mood, pumped up for the weekend. And when we come back, we're going to be talking fishing and rules and regulations and management. Idaho Fishing Game.
That's right.
Back to the Tuesday edition of the morning show. If you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY. We have another song coming on.
Well, we're all about music, Phil.
So, Julie, why don't you introduce the topics and the guest for the second half here?
I'd be happy to. So, our second guest this morning is Idaho Fish and Game, and we're being joined by Andy Ducks. And, Andy, your title is?
The Regional Fishery Manager for Idaho Fish and Game.
I knew it was a big one. I didn't want to get it wrong. And then we're also joined by Tom Whalen. And, Tom, you are a
very senior conservation officer.
Yes, and you do education too.
That's correct.
That's right. That's part of your job. And then we've got a really special guest this morning who's a new member of the Fish and Game family, and she's following Tom around, and her name is Morgan Scott. Good morning, Morgan.
Good morning. And I am a new conservation officer hired in February.
Yes, and you're in training, and you're with Tom at the moment.
Yep.
That's pretty neat. And you'll be going where?
American Falls.
Oh, yes. So you'll be a ways from here, but you're learning up in the best part of the state. So what we'd like to do is start with Andy. And Andy, there's kind of an important time period happening right now, and it's about potential changes to Fish and Game's management plan and also rules and regulations. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, we're right in the middle of about a 30-day public comment period right now. So we just wanted to give folks a heads up that if they want to offer input on proposed fishing rules that we have out there and also our proposed fish management plan that they have until October 7th to do that.
All right. And what's important? Well, let's start with management, but why would people be wanting to offer input on management planning?
Sure. So a lot of folks aren't really familiar with it, but we have a large document basically that sets policy direction for us. So every 6 years, we update what we call our statewide fish management plan. And on a drainage by drainage basis throughout the state of Idaho, we very specifically detail how we're going to manage those different fisheries. And so it's a lot of information. It can be a little overwhelming, but for folks that have particular interest in certain fisheries, it's an opportunity. You may want to look at that document, see how we're going to manage. And if you have input on, you know, what we're proposing to do there, we'd like to hear that.
And as an example, say you were interested in Lake Pendre and you've been hearing about things like, oh, walleyes or northern pike or just the status of the kokanee. Would there be an opportunity for one to comment there?
Absolutely. So, for instance, in this area, a lot of folks do have an interest in the Pendre fishery. So you could go to that fish management plan, look at the Pendre drainage, and go to the details of how we're going to manage the Lake Pendre fishery. And it spells that out, including some new things, which includes language about how we're going to manage what's been a growing threat to the fishery from a walleye population that's been expanding.
Sure, so, there'll be input.
So what are some of the big picture objectives you hope to achieve with the promulgation of these rules?
Sure. Well, so there's the two pieces. The fish management plan kind of sets this broad direction. How are we going to manage these different fisheries? What types of species are we going to manage for? What kind of management actions are we going to have in place? And then with the separate part of that is our actual fishing rules. And those are set on a three-year cycle. So the fishing rules we have out there will take place from 2019 through 2021 over that three-year period. And there's not a lot of changes. We think we only have about six in the panhandle that are proposed. And if you go to our website, you can go to the public, you can go to the Fish and Game website. In the search window, just type in public comment, and you'll be able to go to each region in the state and look at the proposed fishing rules, offer your input. Same with the fish management plan. But those are just different things that we've heard either from the public or that biologically are necessary over the last few years to adapt our rules so that they're most effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. And good that we adjust them from time to time.
Yeah, and so in the ideal world, what's the outcome look like?
Well, I guess in the ideal world, we have rules that are effective from a biological standpoint, allow us to manage for sustainable fish populations, meet the management objectives that the public has told us is important to us, laws that are or rules that are easy for folks like Tom and Morgan to enforce, and hopefully simple for anglers to understand. We do place an emphasis on trying to make rules as simple as possible and not tweak them too much and confuse people.
Mm-hmm. It can be a little complicated, I'll say that. Well, good. And so the date again, Andy, that folks need to respond by?
Yeah, so you have until October 7th to get those comments in. Like I said, you can go to the Fish and Game website, Google public comment, look at the region of the state you're interested. But for instance, the Panhandle, there's also one on there for our fish management plan that you can comment. You can also go to the Fish and Game Facebook page, and there's an article on there about how to do this as well, if you prefer to do it that way, but that'll direct you to the website. You can also, if you're not tech savvy, call or email any of us at the Panhandle Regional Office, and we can take your input over the phone or however you would like to comment.
Okay, even easier way. Well, let's move on to the nuts and bolts of what's happening out in the field. Tom and Morgan, what have you been doing out there?
We've been working.
You have? Good. Yeah,
I think we hit around 120 hours in the last 2 weeks. At least I know I did.
And wow.
Morgan's right there with me. So, doing a great job. This Morgan is part of a, kind of our changing face and our new face in the department. We're getting some fresh blood, which is good. And we always encourage people to see what it's like to be, in our job, to actually be in the field. We do a lot of ride-alongs for, everything, starting with high school kids all the way up through Morgan, who's, graduated from Iowa State University, if I'm correct, mm-hmm. And then has also some military background, applied for, with our outfit, I think within the last year, and then got hired. And so she's through a process that's very intensive, highly trained product that comes out of it. And hopefully the end result is that she just loves to do what she loves to do, which I've been loving to do for 30 years. So.
I know, a lifelong career, and hopefully for Morgan too. And, you know, your work is two-pronged, isn't it? It's certainly enforcement, but a lot of it's education.
Yeah, actually the first day that I had Morgan join me, we actually got into a field trip where we were showing one of the schools, Kokanee, that are running up Trestle Creek right now. And so we do a very involved science-based field trip where, you know, we break into stations and kids learn a lot of different things. I get to do art as well. And we've just truly, you know, had a, I think we've seen the value in mixing, you know, education actually has a spinoff that you have less enforcement problems if you're doing it well.
So what are you finding in the last couple of weeks in the field that's especially what's keeping you so busy?
And let's hear from Morgan. Morgan, how are you enjoying your work?
It's been great. We've had a few elk hunts around here too. So we've been kind of patrolling that area. A lot of fishermen, a lot of people looking for walleye out in Lake Pendere. A few nice cutthroat caught, and just kind of been making our way around the water.
Yeah, we actually even wound up on a check station down in St. Mary's on Sunday night. So we've been you know, definitely spread it out.
You are all over it.
We're all over there. Yeah, when we get requested, and if I see it as, you know, if we have some training value, it's a good idea for us to mix it up a bit. So we try to get out and around. Definitely try to link that education back to the enforcement side of things, and trying to change behavior is and get people to understand the value of the fisheries that Andy's been working so diligently on is probably the, you know, the fundamental goal, really.
That's right. Now, just wanting to let our listeners know that we will be having these folks on again in a couple of weeks, and we're going to be talking more fully about what's happening with fisheries, with Idaho and the state of what's happening with fisheries, what our fish population looks like, what management looks like. So we'll have a full hour coming up. But today we really just wanted to have mm-hmm. you in to hopefully encourage folks to comment during the comment period. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate the opportunity.
Yes, thank you.
Well, thanks for coming in today. You know, I'd love to hear a little bit more about what the fall looks like, though. Are there seasonal changes to what you're experiencing in the field? What do you expect to have coming up?
Well, you know, seasonal changes as far as the fisheries. I mean, we have, you know, a lot of the fisheries are going to be, you know, we're still seeing a lot of bass tournaments, but that's something I see a lot of, you know, through the summer months primarily. Specific to the water, everybody, you know, is looking forward to some of the big fishing tournaments that are coming up. Captain's Table, the Lake Pendere Idaho Clubs mm-hmm. tournament. And we are seeing a lot more people kind of starting to transition back, you know, kind of fishing the deep water again, kind of going out. It's getting colder. As it gets colder, some of those rainbows start coming closer to the surface as the water starts to cool down. But they're still fishing pretty deep. Friend of mine just sent a photo to me of a 22-pound rainbow that he caught this Sunday. So,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, beauty. And, you know, what's more encouraging is not just long, it's, you know, it's heavy. It's been feeding. Mm-hmm. So that's a good sign. Andy probably knows a little bit more about the Kokanee population status.
Yeah, yes. I can quickly mention that, you know, it's been actually a slow summer for Kokanee fishing, not because Kokanee numbers are down, but because we have such a high-density Kokanee out there right now that the growth is slow and the average size is small enough that they haven't been real vulnerable to anglers. But the good news is I've heard some really encouraging reports here just in the last couple of weeks, especially on the south end of the lake down near Bayview, folks that are having some pretty good catch rates from what I've heard on Kokanee, and that should hold up for another few weeks here into mid-October before those fish start to kind of turn into, you know, turn color and start moving towards spawning areas.
Right. Wow.
Well, excellent. Well, we'll look forward to having you back in a couple of weeks. Anything important to share with our listeners before you go?
Have fun. Be safe.
That's right. Well, I've got to ask one last question. Any interesting enforcement stories you can share, or is that too hush-hush?
Secret squirrel stuff.
Oh. But how is enforcement? Are people behaving in general? Has it been a good year?
Oh, yeah. It's always been true. You know, that the vast majority of people we meet are just, you know, they're good people trying to do the right thing.
That's
and
good.
And sportsmen are just that. They're sportsmen. We do have, you know, that enough of a percentage, that very small percentage that keeps us busy, though.
It's the reason you have jobs, right?
That's right.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you can listen to a podcast and hear the entire show. We've enjoyed the second half segment here with folks from Idaho Fish and Game, Andy Ducks, Tom Whelan, and Morgan Scott. So welcome, and we'll see you all back in a few weeks here. Right now, we're going to take a short song break, and then we'll come in blues. And a good way to segue from our conversation with the folks at Idaho Fish and Game, and welcome back to the Tuesday morning show. We have some upcoming events, some exciting community events, some exciting stuff coming up here in KRFY. This evening in the studio, live, an interview at 7 p.m. with local singer-songwriter Maya Goldblum. And a really exciting show coming up this Friday at 4 p.m. A show coming up this weekend. And at 4 p.m. this Friday, there'll be an interview with local singer-songwriter Sadie Cecilia. That should be a lot of fun, both those interviews and the event with Sadie on the weekend.
I'm hoping to hear her. I hope I make it.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. Tune in tomorrow for the Wednesday edition of the morning show for Local Decision 2018. This is the general election that we're preparing for. Morning show hosts Susie and Chris will be interviewing guests leading up to the November 6th election for local candidate interviews and contested races. This week will be District 1B State Representative candidates Sage Dixon and Stephen Hallett. That's right here on 88.5 KRFY at 8 a.m. on the morning show. Thursday this week, join hosts Jack Peterson and Jim Healy. Their first guest will be Don Maglish with Inside Out Cares. Then they'll have a second interview with Brenda Hammond from the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force. She'll be talking about the 100,000 Poets for Change event. That's a big event.
100,000 poets. Are there that many?
100,000 poets. Oh, yeah, there are, but I don't think they're all in the same place at the same time.
That's a lot of poets.
I think it's tied into a movement, if you will. Then, if you're a fan of the Tuesday Morning Show, join us next week. Tuesday, October 2nd, is the 50th anniversary of the passage of the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act, the National Scenic Trails Act. We'll be talking with some exciting guests about the impact of both of those over the last 50 years on conservation and recreation and what it means for us today.
It means a lot for those of us living here in northern Idaho. We are all about that.
It has a huge, tremendous impact. And then, of course, after that, Local Decision 2018 will continue. Candidates for the District 1 State A representative next week will be on the air. So, Julie, there's lots of fun stuff happening in the community, too.
There is. There's a lot going on with KRFY and a lot going on in the community. I'll mention a few. Well, as you know, because we've just interviewed them, the 26th is Crosstoberfest with, as you know, with music, Doug Bond, Ballast Point Brewing. Anyway, very
Yeah, I heard beautiful. Beer in there a
yes,
few times.
Beer, food, et cetera.
It's also a fun event just to watch.
That's right. We still have the Farmer's Market happening both on Wednesday and on Saturday. So that's big, and we love that. Additionally, there will be a documentary on the 26th, Bad Reputation at the Panada, and that should be an interesting one. It was an official selection of the Sundance Film Festival, so that should be a good one. Beyond that, we've got more. On the 28th, Golden Ages of Transportation. It's an art exhibition, Travel Through Time on a Visual Discovery with the Golden Age of Transportation Art Exhibition from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Pondre Art Gallery. So that one might be interesting.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
I think so. It's free. Beyond that, we have Oktoberfest Bash with RFB. That's at McDuff's on the 28th.
RFB. What are they?
RFB.
Is that a music band?
AKA Right Front Burner, and it is a band.
Ah.
So they will be playing, and again, that's a 21-plus event, but that could be a good one if you're wanting to be out and about and hearing music. Let's see. There's a regatta, for those of you who care about sailing. That will be on the 29th, Head of the Pondre Regatta and Barbecue. That starts at 8:30 a.m. and runs until 5 p.m., and it's in Priest River. So
that sounds like a thing for the sailor women and men.
I think so, very yeah. much.
Should
so.
Be a lot of fun. The live final, music. Final days of sailing on the fall on the lake are coming up here pretty soon.
Getting to an end. And then one last thing you might try and join, we heard about this from Susan Drumheller, is Ponderay Neighbor Day. That's on the 29th. Mm-hmm. So get out to Ponderay if you can.
Yeah.
Do we have time for more?
Yeah, keep going. More.
Okay. Well, we've mentioned that Sadie Cecilia will be here, and she will be here, and that's going to be on the 29th at 7 p.m., and I'm hoping to get there because that should be a great concert. Additionally, we have on the 29th, same night, Hoptoberfest, Phil. It's the 5th annual Hoptoberfest, and it's also at McDuff's. Festivities will be pumpkins, Oktoberfest, Harold's IGA will be playing. It's a day of fun with games of cornhole, if you're into that, Hammerschlagen, and more. It's free.
It should be a fun weekend.
I think so.
And somewhere on the calendar there, I think we've got the National Public Lands Day event hosted by the Friends of Scotchman Peaks.
We do, and I'm getting to that, but I'm not seeing
Saturday,
it
yet. Saturday, it's a Trails Day project, as I recall, and you can find out more from the website, scotchmanpeaks.org.
That's right.
But show up and support public lands. Get out, get a little sweat equity in. The show we had last week was about the Listening to Bonner County survey folks who were here in town. And if you didn't make the survey in live, you can still go. It's online, I think, for another week or two at listeningtobonnercounty.org.
That's correct. Yeah. So if you'd like to offer input on where our county should go, that would be a good place to do it.
Yeah, that's always a good thing. And here at KRFY, we want to remind you that it is you, the listener, who support listener-supported public radio for North Idaho. We have our upcoming fall online auction event from October 6th to the 14th at biddingforgood.com/KRFY. It's to support community radio for North Idaho and lots of great items. Just a quick look at all of the many local merchants who supplied gift certificates or goods for bidding.
That's right. Things as basic as an oil change from Steve's Auto to really fancy trips. Anything. Yep.
A lot of things. Some interesting. We've got preseason Seahawk tickets with a room at a Seattle luxury hotel, tropical island condos, sailboat excursions, fine dining, flowers, event tickets, and bottles of reserved wine.
Wow. Something for every budget and every taste.
Yeah. So if you want more information, you can check it out again online at biddingforgood.com/KRFY. If you want to find out more about the event, you can call us here at the station, 208-265-2992. That's going to about wrap it up for today. We're going to go out with a song I don't think we have ever played on the Tuesday morning show, Engelbert Humperdinck. And it's on an album called The 16 Most Requested Songs.
So I'm guessing we've not played that, Phil.
It should be a nice ode to